Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg. I'm with two people now. One of them in particular is a cultural worker. Stephanie Black brings the individual issues of worker abuse to light and perhaps paints the most vivid pictures of U.S. abuse of its power through globalization policies in stunning films. Both her Life and Debt and H2 Worker, just released on DVD. Stephanie now joins me along with Bruce Goldstein with Farm Worker Justice, which is an organization that seeks to empower migrant and seasonal farm workers to improve their living and working condition, immigration status, and their health and their occupational safety and access to justice. Stephanie Black, Bruce Goldstein, thank you for sharing some time with us.
Mimi, thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for having me.
We can't have a more timely discussion of the H2 Worker DVD, Stephanie, since we are in the midst of discussions, or will be shortly, around immigration reform stimulated by the Obama administration. And I want you just to go back and give us a little bit of history and sense of the making of the H2 Worker and how it really begins to inform the debate today.
Well, the documentary is about the 10,000 Caribbean men that they brought in to cut sugarcane in Florida for over 50 years, from the mid-40s through the early 90s. And the temporary guest worker program allowed the men to come in for 6 months to harvest sugarcane because, according to the sugar industry, they could not find Americans who were willing to do the job, so they can file with the Department of Labor, and thus the workers were brought in en masse, and what they expected to encounter was in the hope to come to the United States, because the myth of coming to the United States at that time was that the streets were paved with gold and everyone came back, you know, with lots of cash and products for the family, was not exactly what they found. The living conditions, the working conditions, the pay, the danger of injuries on the job were all part of what they found, yet due to the pressures in the Caribbean, the men continued to come on the program and actually even upheld the myth that it wasn't as bad as what it was. And so that's the H2 Worker kind of sheds light on the guest worker program from both a personal and a legal stand.
I just want to meld this with some of what really is going on today. Bruce, the H2A guest worker program, recently the Obama administration announced a proposal to temporarily suspend the Bush regulations for a period of 9 months. Where are we with the guest workers? And I know it's a little different than when Stephanie first started doing her film, because it's less of the manual labor now and it's more technologized. But have we moved very far, and what are the implications of the suspension?
Well, first I should say that one of the amazing things about Stephanie's film is that it is timeless. The whole nature of the status that guest workers hold in this country causes them to be very vulnerable to abuse. It's easy for employers and others, labor recruiters in the foreign country and others, to take advantage of these workers. And what H2 Worker does is it examines the system that allows this to happen. And that system actually continues today. Now, the Bush-Chow administration at the Department of Labor, on January 17, 2009, put into place a new set of regulations about wages and working conditions for the H-2A guest worker program in agriculture. It slashed the wage rates, removed recruitment requirements, reduced oversight over the program. And when Secretary of Labor Hilda Solis came into office, a few days later, she announced that she was going to plan to reverse those regulations and reinstate the old ones. And we're still waiting for that final action, and it's very troubling that it's now been several weeks since she announced her plan. So we're all pressing hard for her to finalize that plan and reverse the damages that have been inflicted on tens of thousands of farm workers in this country.
One of the remarkable things about your film, Stephanie, H2 Worker, and it reminds me a little bit, and I don't know if you even know this film, it's pretty old now, At the River I Stand, which was a film that essentially depicted the activity of the Reverend Martin Luther King in his last major campaign, which was support for the striking sanitation workers in Memphis. And the reason I say your film reminds me of that is because amidst the terrible oppression and mistreatment and exploitation of the workers, there is a sense of their perseverance and their dignity that really shines through as a source and a potential for organizing. And that's one of the many reasons that I think it is such a strong, important, classic piece of film work that is really very much there looking at globalization-based issues, issues of the working class, agribusiness. You did it splendidly.
Thank you. Thank you. We include on the DVD an update. Since the sugar industry at this time no longer employs men to harvest sugarcane, it's done mechanically. And part of the reason why they switched to mechanical harvesters was in the mid-90s there was a lawsuit which ended up stating that over $51 million was owed to the workers in back pay for cheating the workers on their pay slips, as is documented in the film where they wrote down they did less hours than they actually did in the fields. And as a result of this lawsuit, the industry decided they were not going to pay the men equitably what they were supposed to pay, and they switched at that time to mechanical harvesters. But since then, at that time, the numbers of guest workers that are coming into the country and the expansion of guest workers into other crops throughout the country has expanded. Bruce could clarify more on that probably than I can.
Right. The H-2A guest worker program employs something like 75,000 people a year now in agriculture. It's been growing. And since the founding of the H-2A program, the sugarcane industry in Florida had dominated it, with East Coast apples in it as well. But since the early 90s, it spread. And so now there's H-2A workers in most states. The single largest user is North Carolina, where workers cut tobacco and pick cucumbers. But there's in North Carolina, at least for some workers, there's been a lot of progress. The Farm Labor Organizing Committee, which is a labor union that's part of the AFL-CIO, has organized about 7,000 of those workers. They have a collective bargaining agreement that protects them. But in most places, the workers are still being ripped off under the guest worker program.
I'm interested, Bruce, and then we'll return to some issues of the film, in what you think needs to be said to stimulate the debate within the Obama administration in the direction of progressive reform. I still am filled with trepidation that the legacy of the Bracero programs and the H-2A programs, etc., will somehow become a strategic component part of so-called immigration reform, not to mention sanctions against employers as a hallmark of immigration reform, which would be quite detrimental.
To recognize that we're a country based on economic and political freedom, at least that's what we claim to be, and these guest worker programs should not be the model for the future of immigration to this country. Under the H-2A and H-2B guest worker programs, the workers come in, can only work for the one employer that got them the job. If the job ends for any reason, they have to leave the country. And under those situations, the employer determines who gets the visa. That's not the way our immigration system should work. And, you know, we're optimistic that the Obama administration and this new Congress recognize that. So what we need is immigration reform that offers legal immigration status to undocumented workers in this country. And in that way, they will have the freedom to move around, switch jobs, and make demands on their employers and eventually become citizens and vote. And then for farm workers, there's a compromise about these issues called ag jobs that would allow about 1 million undocumented farm workers in the United States to earn legal immigration status. It would also revise the H-2A guest worker program in balanced ways. And we need Congress to pass ag jobs as part of comprehensive immigration reform.
It's always quite a remarkable but understandable contrast, and that is that capital can transgress any borders. There are no borders for capital to exploit and to move into every area of the globe. But when it comes to workers having free access to opportunity throughout the world, of course, we are still... Well, we have miles to go before we accomplish free labor, really being able to organize across borders and bargain for its own labor powers.
Well, it's an amazing system that has developed into the H-2A program over 65 years. The tentacles that the agricultural employers in the United States have created in these other countries and the elaborate system of labor recruitment, all with the goal of bringing in vulnerable workers, the most vulnerable workers, and nickel and diming them to death, and advocating for policies in the foreign governments and the U.S. governments, all to create an exploitable farm labor force in the U.S. It's just an amazing story, and Stephanie's film, H2 Worker, still tells that story.
Stephanie, I wanted to just pick out, it's pretty arbitrary because I could pick out any section of your film just for a clip to whet people's appetites, and I just want us to listen to a moment of Stephanie Black's film, H2 Worker.
November 7th. My dear Patricia, good day to you and all the rest of the family, and I hope everything is fine with you. We work for 2 weeks now, but the money is very low. They tell us it's always like that in the beginning. They say not much sugar in the cane. I never heard of this, but maybe later on the price will increase. The cold in the morning is very rough up here. We have to wear about 3 shirts to work and pants and gloves. The boss man is fine, and I and them get along well sometimes. The companies here are really big. Even the cane rows are longer, like from Miss Lou's shop to our house. Imagine that. I never saw so much cane before in my life. So take care and kiss yourself till I hear from you. Make sure Kenneth don't let me plot go to bush. Vincent.
You must have to work hard and be trying to obey the rule and regulation of the company to keep inside. Keep working. And what they told you to do, you just do it. Some day work $50, some day work $10. It go up and go down. But when we go in, we see what we make.
Sometimes they put the cane price at $138 a row. The next day they drop it at $105 a row and such like. They keep on. So every time they see we cutting the cane fast, and every time we make a quick money, they drop the price lower and lower the next day.
Interestingly enough, this is the only agricultural minimum wage that is higher than the minimum wage of the United States. The minimum wage for sugarcane work is in excess of $5.
Hey, preacher. Good morning.
Each morning, we get a piece of papers from the company, show us how many feet of cane that workers are supposed to cut for the day or for the hour. Sometimes it shows 350, sometimes it shows 209, sometimes 400. And if he doesn't make it, we are forced to remove him from the field entirely.
Go down and fix the cane, man. Look, man, what are you, man? You haven't seen the cane.
We sign a contract to work by the hour, but we don't really work by the hour. We work by the piece, the task.
Sometimes they say, give the men his hours that he worked. Another time they'll come and say, cut back on the hours. If a man works 8 hours out in the field and only makes $16, we ask to give the men four and a half hours, no more. If because the company doesn't want to give the men their money to make the $41 and a few cents.
It's very painful to know a man out there all day working and only make $16 or $18 or $21. And when his day has completed and he go to a place of rest, he only go with 3 hours on his ticket. That's cruel. That's a part of a bad commitment for we as leaders.
Well, like most employers, they keep records of their employees and how many hours they work and how much sugar cane they cut and so forth and what they pay them. And so it's a matter for our investigators that when they go out to look at the payroll records and to do the calculations, simple arithmetic, to make sure that that amount was actually paid. Now you say, is it possible that there's a discrepancy between what their records show and what was actually paid? Is that what you're getting at? Or?
This is my daily sleep, how I work. I cut 2 quarters of cane and $11.22 each. But for the day, I only make $22.44. Well, I work the 8 hours, but they only put 4.5 hours. Well, the minimum wage is supposed to be $5.22 an hour. But they don't pay us by the hour. Peace work.
And it brings a lot of difference between us as leaders and workers. A lot of hatred in which the companies force us to do it, and our own brother.
The employer dares not underpay him, or dares not try to, because he'll be running up against so many things. He'll be running up against the liaison officer in the first instance. He'll be running up against your state law and even your federal law. So why would you want to kick against those bricks?
This is my paycheck. Total amount is $252.35. 2% come out for insurance, for boarding, which is for food, $80.85, and for traveling is $21 net come out. So in my hands is $94.91 for 2 weeks. I got injured, I got cut, so I could not have worked. Because I was sick, for the fortnight I didn't get no pay. That's why I tell them, say I owe them $80.
Even the savings you have back home, when you go home, it's a problem to get it. When you go to the bank, the money not there for you.
The reason for the 25% deduction is just common sense. This is a good way of holding some of the money to be of value to the person. But after that, I think one may be well getting into a case of misguided paternalism. And certainly the idea that the worker can't get all of the savings at one time, particularly say if he has an investment project that he'd like to put it into, obviously that is something that should be looked at. And certainly to the extent that you say, and I confess I had not realized this, that they don't get interest on it, I think that's just wrong. They should get interest on it because the government uses that money and invests it and gets the benefit of it.
You hear that you're supposed to get your money within 90 days. And when you go there, in 5 months, sometime you go there trying to say, you have something to put through. Like I'm trying to build my house. And when I want some block, I want some cement and steel to buy. And when I go there, sometime I get quarter of my money. That can't put through nothing.
Well, we're just whetting your appetite, but let me further emphasize that what's happening here is, and Stephanie's going to tell us more, people have been given contracts, and the squalor of the conditions, etc., are quite remarkable. And what I want to know, Stephanie, is how in the world did you get into this barracks? Because I know it's private property, and they were not about to let you just go in there and record the sentiments and concerns and conditions that these gentlemen live under. So how did you do this? And you did it so beautifully.
The sugar industry, when I first decided to do the documentary, I approached the sugar industry and explained, you know, what I wanted to do. And they said, no, that, you know, the men don't like to be filmed and they have to protect the men and such, and that they couldn't allow us because they're foreigners, et cetera, et cetera. And so from that point on, it kind of became a little bit of a cat and mouse game, whereas we would... you know, there's a seller in the film who would sneak onto camps to sell, and through her, I learned how to go to which camps on different nights, which camps the supervisors would be off duty, which camps, there were some camps buried way, 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 way out off the beaten track, and those camps were often easier to get into. I worked with a small crew, there were three of us. And what I used to do is we would go into the camps and hopefully get out quick enough, you know, before the sugar industry called the police, because they own, you know, the police force and everything down there in Belgrade and Cluiston. And so basically it was a cat and mouse game. I used to go and drive every 2 days from Belgrade to West Palm Beach to change the rental car. It was quite funny to the workers that every day we'd show up and we would have a different car color, because as soon as we were caught once, then there would be a radio, you know, send out with the license plate of the car and such. And so then the police would be stopping us all along the road. And fortunately for trespassing, you have to be caught on the property. And so we were lucky that we were always able to get in and out. The one time that we did get caught on the camps, I accidentally locked the car keys in the car. And the owner of the camp came over and he saw us. And as he came over, Marisa Alberti, who is a cinematographer of the film, she's amazingly talented. She shot The Wrestler, is one of her latest works. This is actually H. DeWorker was her first film that she shot. She gracefully put her jacket over the camera, and one of the workers, without even speaking, just took the camera from her and brought it inside the barrack. Mm-hmm. And the grower presumed that we were working ladies, because the women weren't on the camps unless they were selling something. And so the grower arranged for a locksmith to come and get the keys out and instructed us that when we were done there, we should come up and see him. And it was an amazing moment of complicity between ourselves and the workers, you know, for the girl having made such a kind of fool of himself and such. But it just, I was much younger then, and it was just like we were just determined. And so every day we were just, you know, we kept getting caught. The police kept stopping us, but we just kept going. There's a book actually written by Alec Wilkinson that was written at the same time called Big Sugar. And in the book, it's interesting. He explains how difficult it was for him to get on the camps. And I always, you know, and he was just a single person writing, and we were sneaking on with, you know, a camera crew and sound gear. But we were able to do it. And I have to thank Rosalie, who is the woman you see in the film selling, that the camps have a camp store, and so that was another way where they would, you know, pay the men and then slowly take their paycheck back from them, or maybe not so slowly. And so they had a camp store where they sold goods to the men on the property, and there was a Jamaican woman who would sneak in at night, you know, to sell them other things to take home, and the sugar industry didn't want it. And it was actually through her need for a car, which I had, and her knowledge of how to move around the camps, that we figured out how to do it.
Well, let me tell you, if you haven't seen and you don't have a copy of H2Worker, which was just released on DVD by Stephanie Black, it is gorgeously shot. It is an absolute classic. It is profound in its message, its content, its character. It is a tribute to the dignity and beauty of workers, and an absolute condemnation of really agribusiness and the exploitation of immigrant labor. And thank you for making that film, H2Worker. And Bruce Goldstein, you've got a great website, Farm Worker Justice. Tell people where it is so that we can keep up on these critical issues of immigrant labor and their support.
Sure, thank you. And again, thanks for having me on and for featuring Stephanie's wonderful film. Yes, www.farmworkerjustice.org. And you can find all sorts of information about guest workers and farm workers and labor rights and occupational safety and health, toxic pesticides, and all the things that farm worker groups have been organizing around to bring a new day to migrant and seasonal farm workers in this country.
I thank you, Bruce, for the work that you do. Stephanie, I thank you for being a superb, sensitive, caring, socially conscious filmmaker. Not enough of folks like you. Definitely should get Life and Debt, and you should get H2 Worker, just released on DVD. Stephanie Black, thank you very much for joining us.
Mimi, thank you for your kindness and your kind words. A big, big, big smile, which doesn't translate on radio, but thank you.
I think it just did. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.